This is May the 28th, 1954. The notice sex scale. This is something we haven't covered completely since it was first introduced. It's been gradually developing, you might say. And a great deal of information has come up about it. So it's time that I covered this rather completely. First noticed the coordination between look and know, and discovered that attention was condensing in a certain way, and that as this attention condensed, we seemed to get different states. And the more condensed the attention, why, the more difficult the preclear was to work. So there was a relationship between the difficulty of working a preclear and the condensation of attention. Now, when we say condensation, we actually mean fixation of attention. But actually, it manifests itself just like objects. So you would consider this scale, then, this way. We start at the top of the scale, and we have no space, no mass, if you can consider that. That would be the top of the scale, no space, no mass. Then we get down to a point where we have some space. We don't have any mass. And from there on, we're into the third dynamic. By the way, just a little bit before space, we're into the third dynamic, but we're into the third dynamic for fair. And we get start to get interchanges of attention, and we start to get condensations thereof. Well, as we get these condensations, we go on down to, if you could consider space with just a few particles in it, you would have emotion. And then if you would get these particles more condensed, actually not the same particles really, actually heavier particles, this space more condensed, we would get effort. You know, that's very little space and lots of heavy particles. And now we would go down below that, and we would get the activity of an individual in trying to adapt thought to limited space and enormous obstacles, or obstacles. See, we're getting somebody who's trying to think his way through mazes. He is trying to avoid effort. This is the type of thinking which is devoted to the solution of problems. And that is right there where we find the definition that was came out there that we had in 1947. And that definition was the activity of the brain. It said brain at that time. Brain was to resolve problems relating to survival. Well, you see, there are barriers to survival, and the brain, or a computing machine, has its attention devoted to escaping these barriers. So we get thinkingness, actually, as a heavier condensation than effort. People start thinking when they begin to believe that effort itself is damaging or should be avoided. And they only really start thinking, as we consider thinking, well, now let me see, figure, and judging by past experience, let's see now the future should be, figure. Now, the best way to do this is to adjust the carburetor, and then it will run a little faster. All that type of computing there is in an effort to overcome effort. Effort itself is the target, so we get thinking down below the effort band, and we go down from thinking, and we get thinking really condensed, we get symbols. Language itself is a package of thinking. And we get a word. A word contains a lot of thinking. One word all by itself. So we get the symbol band, and we go down below the symbol band, and we get into eating. And we go down eating, below eating, and we get sex. Only when an individual has objected to eating, only when there is not enough to eat, only when an organism cannot continue to survive in its own mind, it cannot survive as that unit organism, does it begin to think in terms of sex. Sex is an escapement of eating. It is a method of keeping people from eating you, you know, by having another purpose and so forth. It's a complex mechanism. And it is a very condensed attention. Now, we notice several things occurring here as we go from the top to the bottom of this scale. We see that each part of this scale would contain a number of subparts. In other words, it has graduations in each major graduation. So it goes, the scale proper actually goes this way. Know, K-N-O-W, look, emote, effort, think, symbols, eat, sex, no knowingness. And there's the way the scale lays off properly. Now, this is actually the tone scale. And this is a way of plotting the tone scale. And we find out that this condensation of attention leaves us with a series of ridges and dispersal areas as soon as we enter below space. So we have barriers. And it is what? It is a scale of barriers. So it is the scale of things that are blocking the goals of the individual. Now, there is the setup on it. Each one of those major divisions which I've given you is to be considered one way or the other a kind of barrier. We don't get space as a barrier until we get lookingness. And an individual who is well down along the line, let's say he's in the thinking band, his effort to look is impeded by the fact that space is such a horribly huge, way up above him, insurmountable barrier that he can't even tolerate the idea of distance. And you say, how would you like to walk from here to Chicago? And the fellow says, Well, let's ask him a simpler one. Let's say, just get the idea of the distance from here to Chicago. And he goes, oh, no. Space. Space is a barrier itself. All right. Where's time come in there? Time would not enter until particles had entered. So actually, time doesn't enter properly until you have a dimension point, which would be the lower edge of the look band or the upper edge of the emote band. And there we would have time. Time and emotion would be the first collision with man. He would collide with emotion when he collided with time. He would collide with time when he collided with emotion. And this is quite interesting that we find individuals most worried about time in the level of boredom on the tone scale. And of course, or the tone scale which we have had to date and which we've been studying to date is actually really no more than, as it's laid out there, the basic original tone scale is no more than simply the effort as the bottom and not much of the effort band right up the line into look. And that is the band which we've been studying, and the names that we have had for it are all emotional names. So we've been looking right there at the emotional band. So look how much more tone scale we've got here now. We've got an awful lot more tone scale. Well, this came about in this study. I had to find out how far south can you get, see, in order to pick up a lot of cases and so on. And the further south I tried to get, why the further north went to, and finally got this whole scale laid out there. Now, I'm not trying to tell you right now that that's the total scale. In the first place, I found out this about it. You have a notice-sex scale, and then an inverted notice-sex scale, and then an inverted notice-sex scale, and an inverted notice-sex scale. You can break the tone scale down this way. You can break it above and below 20. Notice-sex above 20, and then notice-sex below 20. And there's a lot bad about the notice-sex scale below 20 and a lot good about the notice-sex scale above 20. You get no as a good thing above 20, but below 20 you get no as something that maybe you better not do. It's bad. Somebody who knew everything was bad would be suspected of being lame somehow or other on sex, wouldn't he then? So if we ran notice-sex with each category bad as a lower inversion, then we would expect somebody who knew everything was bad to be remarkably upset on the subject of sex. See, because it would be upscale to him to try to find anything good about sex. And so we would have somebody who was below this band. Well, we look at this and we find out it doesn't divide into two parts, it divides into many parts. We have notice X, inverted notice X, inverted notice X, inverted notice X. So which one of these inversions is your preclear on? You say, all right, my preclear is stuck on sex. See? Which one? It isn't an adequate statement. Which one of these inversions do you mean? He's stuck on sex, but which inversion? Well, he's stuck on sex in that he is worried about whether or not he can have children. Must be the first inversion. That's fairly normal activity for sex, you see. All right, let's have another one. He's worried about sex because he can't get any fun out of it. We must be talking something about the first inversion. The inversion one down. You know, children don't enter into this. They've dropped out of the thing. The purpose of sex is gone. All right, now let's hit it again, and let's find out that this preclear says sex. You say, what's wrong with sex? Well, all of my boyfriends, and actually are talking about a complete inversion of inversion of inversion. Well, you don't have to worry about how many times this is inverted, actually, because it all works out the same way. You get the same manifestations, and they exist as the same barriers, regardless of whether they're inverted or not. In other words, a fellow who's stuck on sex is stuck on sex. We don't care where and what inversion. We'll find out when we begin to process him with something like 8D. However, that as he begins to come up tone scale, he goes very flightily up the next flight of stairs. You know, you say, where's sex safe? And he flies around and he doesn't get it much and it seems to run forever or something of the sort. And then all of a sudden he's talking about fear. And we process some fear, and fear really isn't properly a barrier at all. And it's an in-between, it's a dispersal. And the next thing you know, why, he's talking about what he knows. Well, don't be surprised to swing around the wheel again and find him stuck in sex. Well, we're going to find out where some sex part or something of the sort is safe, and we're going to start upscale from this sex part, and we find out, boom, he goes right straight into effort as a barrier, and then, boom, he goes straight into anger as a barrier, and then, boom, he knows that all knowingness is bad. Well, we've got something else here going on. And don't be surprised again to find him stuck in sex. So we process a little more sex, and he goes, zoom, and symbols, nah. They impede you from thinking. Then you run a little bit more, and you find out that he's into effort. And then zoom, he's into looking, and he skips knowing entirely, and he's stuck in sex again. You say, what the dickens is going on here? Well, we process some more sex. We find some more sex to be safe. And he goes up into, for the first time, eating. And he moves up rather easily. His mind starts to maunder around on the subject of symbols. And then it starts to go around on the subject of thinking. And then it starts to hit effort. And then it hits apathy. And then it hits grief. And then it hits anger. And then it hits boredom. And this time he's getting up and he says, what do you know? My perception is really getting good. So he's going right on into look, and then you're going into knowing. You finally hit the scale. Well, what is this? This means that the notice sex scale itself is condensed attention. And you get the notice, you get somebody who is terribly bad off, would have the notice sex scale down far enough to where the thing was almost totally an interweave and a condensation. See, all things equal to all things. Sex is knowingness, is eating, and eating is actually emotion, and so on. And we just got all things plugged into all things. We got a total short circuit. Well, we start to process then 8D, and we find that we've stretched the circuit a little bit, not very much. You know, we really couldn't find a place where Mother was safe, but we finally had to leave it. And we did find a couple, three places, you know, but it just was too arduous. The preclear is having an awful time on it because it kept sliding off into people's anger. So we found out something about where emotion was safe. We got that kind of cleaned up. And the next thing you know, he was worried about what he knew. And it just sort of zoomed thing. See, you see, there's a big condensation. Now, as you run a few of these out, we get into the next band, which is not quite as the note of sex scale, not quite so condensed. And then when we run some of that, we get into the next band, and it's not quite so condensed. And we get into the next band, and it's getting remarkably uncondensed. There's only several things identified there. You only have sex identified with effort, you know, and effort slightly identified with looking. Not too much, you see. You know, you're way upscale now. Individual doesn't engage in much sex because it tires his arms or something. And we have this the scale then itself is a condensed manifestation. Well, we obviously, as we roll up the scale, then begin to find more and more subdivisions, more and more differentiation in each band of it. And when you first look at the scale, why, that's enough. So you just know, well, that's enough. That's all the knowingness there is just knowingness, and that's that. And it's a fait accompli, and it's an allness in itself. And lookingness, well, lookingness is just lookingness, and that's that. And emotingness is emotingness. And it'd be whatever kind of emotingness the fellow didn't like or considered a barrier. And most people, when they get to be in good shape, will hang up, for instance, on boredom. And then people won't know what the devil's happened to the preclear. He's not taking any interest in life after all that processing. Well, he's come up to emotion, hung up in boredom. But this is all the emotion there is to him, you see. It's boredom. It's total emotion. Emotion is just emotion. And we get on down the line, we find sex is just sex. If you try to put into his hands a book, the 70 and 7 Delights of Love, which was in very, very bestseller circulation back in Babylon, he would look at this and he would say, well, after all, it just all boils down to sex. That's all it is. 70 and 70, well, ways to do sex, but that's all it is. See? You know, he's got an identification there going. Well, as you processed him, if you were going in the right direction and accomplishing anything in the processing, this identification would start to come apart and we would start to get differentiation. And each one of these, instead of just note a sex scale being condensed, we would get each one of these distinct, and each one of these separate distinct parts would itself start coming apart. And we would have the total tone scale, for instance, as one manifestation. Then we would find that the sex scale, sex band there, of that particular level of scale, would itself be widely differentiated. The individual would not be able to recognize as an identified thing, for instance, the sexual activities of Homo sapiens and the sexual activities of elephants. See, these would be very different things to him. The fact that they had a purpose, which was a common purpose, would not itself sufficiently unite these two activities. But you get somebody who's way down the line, well, sex, elephants, human beings, all the same, so on, didn't make fun anyhow, and so on. See? We've gotten up there where we've got a wider band. Well, there's large gradients of each one of these bands. Gradients which we have been talking about, by the way, from time to time, but haven't really labeled them as such. Now, we know the tone scale gradients. We know the tone scale, the emotional tone scale. You see, we know the tone scale. Well, that is the emotional band of the note of sex scale. And it, of course, is a very simple one. We've got that all disentangled, and that's in pretty good shape. But the funny part of it is that, do you know that there are, as we get down toward the bottom of the thing, we get terrifically condensed emotions. That is to say, we get down there, there is a sort of an apathetic anger, and a whole lot of little strange emotions right in that apathy band there. It's pretty well condensed too. Well, we know the emotional band, however, and it simply goes, apathy, grief, fear, anger, antagonism, boredom, enthusiasm, serenity. That's good enough at the moment for an emotional band. That's all you'll ever need. These are quite distinct. But there are many parts of the effort band. There are as many parts of the effort band as there are kinds of force energies. and they all fall in different parts of the effort band itself. Now, we go on up to lookingness, and by golly, there's an awful lot of lookingness, because lookingness is a careless use of perception. That should be called the perception band. But we call it the lookingness band because space belongs there, you see, and that's the primary activity to make space. But we have a lot of other conditions of lookingness. And we get hearing and tasting and other perceptions, there are 55 of them, as a condensation of lookingness. Lookingness starts out there, and we find out that this thing springs apart to 55 items, each one with its proper position in relationship to the other items in the field of perception. Call your attention, 1947, Scientology, a New Science, where it says there is a subscience of perceptics. Well, believe me, that became a subscience. Psychology had bumbled around with this thing, and they had concluded finally that nobody looked anyhow because they couldn't see. And they don't even talk about looking at things as part of a mental function. They talk about all kinds of subterfuginous peerings, but mostly sensations. They talk about sensations. Well, these sensations are emotions. They are not perceptions. There are 55 different perceptions, all kinds of them, and they belong on that scale up there. Well, there's no reason really to go into all 55 of them, because you'll never use them as an auditor, and it's just a piece of data, which you'll come by yourself anyhow one of these days, so why throw a lot of stuff in here we don't need immediately for our use? You'll find some guy, for instance, hung up on smells. There's a great crude thing. He won't perceive, he won't hear, because hearing is identified with smelling. See, you clean up smelling and he starts hearing. Well, you've got a lower inversion of the scale at work. All right. Well, if all this is the case, what the dickens about this? Let's get into this and really thrash around and find out there's some terrifically important factors which we've missed in these subdivisions. Here you say there are probably more parts to perception than there are to emotion, and there are more parts of, as many parts of effort as there are types and kinds of effort particles. Well, how about kinds of thinking, huh? Oh, boy, you just start looking out at the realm of philosophy, and they are discovering nothing more nor less than different ways of computing. And they are just endless. Why, the systems of logic. You take Aristotle. Well, Aristotle is represented at a very distinct, definite part of the thinkingness band when you break it down and make it into a large band. When you take a big magnifying glass and look at this band we've been calling thinking, you'll find Aristotle sitting right there with black and white logic and the syllogism. Yay and nay type of logic. There is no truth in this at all. Logic doesn't go yes and no. No matter how much the Catholic Church would just love to foist this off on you. Things are bad or things are good. Two-valued logic. An engineer, even in the days of Rome, couldn't think with two-valued logic. And the boys used to sit around on the road-building projects when anybody would bring up philosophy, because people discussed things in those days and they knew what was going on. They would give this the merry ha-ha. How in the name of common sense could you ever build a road if everything was completely bad or completely good? It just wouldn't be possible to do so. The rock was more or less usable. The road bed was more or less durable. Here we had variation all the time. Well, in Scientology, we got tired of all this, and we've got now infinity-valued logic. We go from two-valued logic straight up to the line of three-valued logic. Yes, no, and maybe. And now let's go from yes, no, and maybe into the next level, and the next level up from yes, no, and maybe would be no greater than yes, yes greater than no sort of logic, which is Boolean algebra, which is more or less the way the mind and telephone switchboards and so forth work. And I got tired of all this, so I said to the values, we can add all these up till kingdom come. We'll just hang this whole thing with a final, an ultimate, a peg up, that, will be right there forevermore, and we will say infinity-valued logic, and nobody can beat that one, because infinity doesn't even exist, so they can't exceed it. And that's, well, we'll just finish off this business of how many brands of logic are there. Actually, there are a tremendous number of brands of logic that are not touched by the Aristotelian system, or by engineering logic, or by Boolean algebra, or by mathematics in general. And one time or another, you'll be out talking to some witch doctor or the Goldie people in Manchuria or something, and you will get the strangest line of reasoning that you ever looked at in your life. And you will say, good Lord, how can he possibly hang these things together and come up with a conclusion he comes up with? Well, the funny part of it is, because everything is a consideration anyhow, it probably works just as well for him as arithmetical logic works for you. And yet, it'll be apparently completely disassociated, the various elements he is using and the way he's combining them. He's been taught into a system of logic you and I wouldn't really recognize, even vaguely, as logic. We would think he was a disassociating neurotic until the next day when we found out he was absolutely right. Had that happen to me, it's a very great shock. Now, as we look up the line here in the bands of logic, we find out that there's Germanic logic. And not to go into the thing too deeply, because if you ever did go into Germanic logic all the way, you'd never get out. Because nobody could unmake that many postulates. Germanic logic is the most gorgeous stuff. For instance, it scientific logic of a few centuries ago would work at it this way. We have disproven all of these points, so this point over here is true. That's Germanic scientific logic. We have disproven this complete battery of points, and that leaves this one point which we haven't disproven, so it's true. You say that doesn't work. Well, that's right, it doesn't work, but they used it. Now, you wonder, how about logic in the early days? Very early days. We don't have to go back into the early days. Just look at one century ago and find out that Piazzi took a telescope and he looked up at the planets, and he found that there was one varying a little bit, so he looked a little harder, and he found that there was an eighth planet in the sky. Good heavens, there was an eighth planet up there, so he rushed around and told everybody there was an eighth planet in the sky, and what do you know? Nobody would accept the existence of the eighth planet because Hume, I think it was, had just published a book proving conclusively that as seven was an indivisible and classic number, there could only be seven planets. And you know, everybody went right on from there. I said a century ago, that's wrong. It's a little earlier than that. I don't even know that it was Hume. It may have been Hegel. I lose track of these boys. But there, you see, that strikes you as being very, very nutty, very, very, very off track. How could anyone say this, that just because somebody wrote a philosophic dissertation which proved this, that nobody would go out and look? Do you know that it was not logically accepted at that time that you went out and looked to prove anything? You see, this is a part of logic. You didn't look to prove something. Now, we looked to prove something, and they didn't, so this seems odd to us. Well, boy, we'd certainly seem weird and peculiar to them, the way we're thinking around here. They'd say, well, it's perfectly true, then, that all this stuff is false, because you have made a lot of people well. And you would say, how on earth can you draw this conclusion? And they would say, well, making a lot of people well, that isn't really the purpose of existence. Everybody is supposed to go to heaven. I mean, somebody's liable to ring that one in on you. The goals are different, and other things vary, so logic varies. Well, let's not beat that to death. Let's look at the upper harmonic. And let's look at knowingness itself. And let's find out it breaks down, you could say, knowingness postulate. But now we can break down a postulate into considerations, commands, significances. And boy, we've just got a whole big band of knowingness levels there. A great, big, wide one that doesn't say just knowingness. How many of are there on it? I would say probably, comfortably, that there were 1,000,000 to the infinity power. At least. gradient scales of knowingness on the upper knowingness band. Lord knows how much is there. But what is awfully important to you as an auditor, this is on the upper level of the knowingness band. Consideration and command, because command is the bridge down into lookingness, which makes space condense. Command, consideration. So those two things have to be added to 8D to make 8D entirely workable. And one more thing down at the bottom of the scale, mystery. After sex, we get mystery. And so we add that to 8D, and we've got these three things added then to 8D. At the top, consideration, below that, command, and at the bottom of the scale, mystery. Where would they be safe? Where would they find you safe? Okay.